Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office. Although, Zorba, I'm not hearing that piped-in elevator music that you hear in the doctor's office.
It's in your brain.
Is it in your brain. That's what that sound is. That's Kenny
Sometimes
G in my brain.
Sometimes you can't get it out of your brain.
Maybe Kenny G's listening.
There we go.
That would be great if Kenny G
was listening. Always listening.
He's always listening. His hair is always listening, I feel like. All right, we'll talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Right. We're going to talk about ringing in your ears, tinnitus. A new device may provide some relief. We get lots and lots of emails whenever I talk about tinnitus. If you've got ringing in the ears, you're going to want to hear about this. And then we're going to talk about weekly exercise, physical exercise, lowering the risk that your kidneys will become bad and dysfunctional, the risk in diabetes, overweight and obesity, another update on exercise, and the importance because we don't get enough exercise in America today. Most of us don't. There's some good reasons why you should do it.
All right. And what's our special guest author recipe today?
Pineapple pizza with bacon and jalapenos.
Ooh.
Even talking about it makes my mouth water.
That sounds great. We'll get to that later. All right. To the phones we go. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller now. This is a listener from New Berlin, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. I have a question. My husband has been diagnosed with liver disease due to fatty liver, and his liver doctor says to take Tylenol if he needs something, but his primary doctor tells him not to take Tylenol, to take ibuprofen. So what does Zorba Pastor have to say?
So tell me a little bit more about it. Your husband had some liver abnormalities, or what sort of liver disease does he have? And the reason...
Fatty liver disease.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me chime in a little bit on this. We know how people who take too much Tylenol, too much acetaminophen, especially if they do that and they drink, that this can cause liver problems and is one of the reasons for liver failure within the country. Now, when I say liver failure, I'm talking about people and Tylenol. I'm talking about generally people who take lots and lots of Tylenol or too much alcohol and the combination thereof. On the other hand, elevated liver function tests, which are very, very common, it's kind of a different issue, and it's really something we have to finesse. We know that ibuprofen, on the whole, is not going to affect the liver. It's generally eliminated by the kidneys, so it's better. On the other hand, too much ibuprofen can also cause problems. So how old is your husband?
64.
Your husband is 64. How long has he had it? How long has it been identified?
Well, he was diagnosed with diabetes several years ago, and the endocrinologist at that time said something about fatty liver, and we didn't think anything of it.
Right.
But, I mean, he's not a drinker. But a couple of years ago, we had to have an ultrasound of his stomach, and they found a spot on his liver, and he was diagnosed with cirrhosis.
So he's got cirrhosis. Okay, so cirrhosis puts it in a totally different category. So he doesn't just have fatty liver disease, he has cirrhosis. So that's another category, and you can get a cirrhosis not just from alcohol, but from other issues. So on the whole, if you have cirrhosis, I think I would follow the most prudent thing, and I would stay away from Tylenol. That's what I would do. I think cirrhosis puts it in another category that means he's at more high risk. So I would follow the most conservative thing, which is stay away from it. I would use ibuprofen as needed, and I would follow what the gastroenterologist said.
Okay, well, the gastroenterologist says to stay away from ibuprofen and take the Tylenol.
Oh, so the gastroenterologist, let me get that.
Right.
So in other words, the gastroenterologist says, yes, you can take the acetaminophen. And the primary care doctor says, no, don't take the acetaminophen.
Correct.
Oh, That's very interesting. Well, you know something? I'm not going to answer this question. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
It's too complicated. In other words, if he has a spot and it's cirrhotic, it would mean it's a higher risk for me. On the other hand, it depends on what his liver function tests are. And that would make it, if the liver function tests are too high, that would be something that would have a factor. And sometimes when you've got something like this, it becomes very difficult to determine between one thing and the other. And as your country radio doctor, you have to know what you can answer and what you cannot answer. So this is when I have one word for it, punt. Thanks for your call. I can't answer it. It's too complex, frankly, and I would follow it over time. And I don't know what a good answer is because we often do need something when we have a headache or we have discomfort or dysfunction or something else. So I can't answer the question, but thank you.
Could she get a third opinion, maybe? Or?
You can always get a third opinion, but how do you have a third opinion? You've got the gastroenterologist and you've got the primary care doc. By the way, how long have you seen the gastroenterologist?
About a year and a half.
A year and a half. More than one visit? Several visits?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. He sees them every 6 months, and he has an MRI done every 6 months to keep an eye on it.
To keep an eye on, I take it obviously the spot that is
correct.
There. So if I'm sitting there in the office, I'm a family doc, and I say, look, you came to me for another opinion. I've got to decide between a primary care doctor and a gastroenterologist. My own brain would say I'm going to side with a gastroenterologist because they're going to know more about it. That's what I would do if you came to me for a third opinion. But I'm not giving you that opinion as a radio doctor.
Correct.
I'm telling you what I would do if you were in my office.
Do I have to read the disclaimer right
now,
this early in the show?
Well, because, you know, that's what it is. But that's how I would think about it if you were actually in my office. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Zorba.
You're welcome. You take care now.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic today. We're going to talk about tinnitus or tinnitus, depending on how you choose to say it.
That's right.
And we
what
get a lot of emails about
you're
that
on
one.
The sunny side or the unsunny side?
There's a new device, apparently, that it says it tickles the tongue and it stimulates and can help with tinnitus.
Well,
let's hear about this.
And it may help. But, you know, tinnitus is a big issue. It's not a small issue. Now, there's tinnitus, which is temporary, that can be caused by medications. For instance, aspirin overdose can cause tinnitus, but it goes away. For the most part, tinnitus comes sort of with time and with age and with going to concerts. Now, I never went to rock concerts. Well, I guess I did go
I
to rock concerts.
What was the best rock concert you ever saw? Sorry to interrupt.
The best rock
concert?
What's the
first thing that goes to your
head? The Stones,
oh,
of course.
Of course. Yeah.
Come on. I mean, the Stones.
What year Stones generally was
you know,
that?
So, you know,
like
something,
70s?
There's some things we don't answer over the air, you know?
Anyways, back to this tongue thing.
I'll leave that up to your imagination. We'll just leave it up to the imagination. But on the other hand, I have tinnitus. I've had it intermittently for years, and I think it came from Jordy Lewis, who put a cap gun into my ear, to my ear, and I was 8 years old and went bang. And my guess is that's where it started. And sometimes it bothers me more than others. In the summertime, when the cicadas are out, I can't tell if it's the cicadas or my tinnitus. And if I think about it, like right now, it gets louder.
I have
if
it
I don't
too.
Think about it.
Yeah,
it
I
goes,
have mild
it goes
tinnitus
away.
As well.
But some people are terribly involved with it. It's awful.
Mm-hmm.
And we sent them to, for instance, cognitive behavioral therapy to try to get to the other side of it. I mean, they find it very intrusive. And without even talking about it, it gets worse and worse and worse, and they can be driven crazy by it. And so there's a device that may work. And I want to put aside before I talk about this device, dietary supplements have not seemed to cause any difference in tinnitus. Now, some people say it really helps them. They should take them. But from double-blind studies, we can't actually show which ones are better. And there may be individual differences. Science doesn't answer that. But this particular device called Lanier, L-E-N-I-R-E, and I might be mispronouncing it, was approved by the FDA back in March, cost about $2,500, $3,000, something like that. And they're stainless steel. They're electrodes that stimulate the tongue. And this particular clinical trial showed that about 84% of the people who tried it experienced a significant reduction of symptoms. And what you have to do, you have to use the device for 1 hour each day for 12 weeks. So for 12 weeks, you've got to put electrodes on your tongue.
It's a good amount of time.
Yeah, it's a good amount of time. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why it's also for people who have significant tinnitus, who are really bothered by it. And they have a set of earphones. They put the device on the tongue, and there are a series of tones and ocean wave sounds. So what you're doing is you're training yourself to not think of the tinnitus. I don't know if it actually gets rid of the tinnitus, because we have no objective way of measuring tinnitus. I mean, I have said to my kids, I don't remember silence. I don't remember it because when I'm in a room, it's not silent anymore. Now, I know there used to be silence, but in the house, I always have something else going in the background because if I don't, it becomes too loud and I remember that problem. Do you have silence?
I don't either. I always hear a little something, a little ringing. Yeah. And then at night when you go to bed, I hear it a lot more.
Yeah. But does it drive you crazy?
No, it's not that bad. But the more I think about it, then you can really get in your head about it. Then you're like, oh, this is getting worse and worse the more you think about it.
Exactly. And so for some people, they can't get out of that state. And for this particular device that might be helpful. It's pricey, $2,500 to $3,000. It's not a minimal thing, but some people swear by it. I don't identify that. I'm not, promoting this device. I mean, I read about it. But for people who are driven nuts by their tinnitus, this may be something that they're willing to try, because for some people, it is so intrusive, they can't even do their work. They can't even concentrate on things. They can't meditate. It really interferes with their job and so on. And so the device may be useful. And once again, approved by the FDA, so it was proven in a double-blind study to be worthwhile, and so it might be worthwhile for you.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call us anytime. Leave us a voicemail. Speaking of voicemails, let's go to one. This is a listener in New York.
Dr. Zorba, calling about kidney stones today. I've been diagnosed with kidney stones, and I'm wondering if there's a way to actually shrink those kidney stones inside your kidney so you could pass them rather than have a procedure to get them removed. Thank you. Have a great day.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be great.
It would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Kidney stones are common. They affect 1% to 2% of the population. Many of them never move out of the kidneys, especially the big ones. And it would be nice if we could give you something and just dissolve it. It would also be nice if we had a drug that prevented them from having them. I mean, I've had kidney stones. Once they moved on their own, and the other time I needed the thing called lithotripsy, which is where you get the stone to sort of vibrate and then it shatters and little pieces end up coming out. And you have to do that for people with kidney stones that are stuck. Many people have to have a urological procedure where you put to sleep, they go in, they go up there and they shatter it by ultrasound, or they grab with a little basket to pull it down. Is there a drug? Nope. Not at this moment. Mm. Is there something that's actually being tested for it? I don't know if there's something out there. I know the pharmaceutical companies have really been working on this for years, because if we had something to dissolve kidney stones, and if we had something, by the way, to dissolve gallstones, you would then have a $1 billion drug that would make you incredibly rich. And the answer is, you better believe that Big Pharma is looking into this.
I have a kidney stone story real quick.
Please,
walked up to me. I was just walking down the street.
You mean down the street? Walking down the street. Kidney stone story. In other words, you got a K on you or something.
No, no, this guy tried to hand me a brochure, and it said, kidney stone prevention.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
He said, do you want this? And I said, nah, I'll pass.
Oh, God.
Was that worth it? Probably not. 800-462.
I'll pass.
800-462-7413.
Your brain works in strange and unusual ways.
Awful.
I just sunk right into that, didn't I?
You were into it. Sorry. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462.
I can just imagine you in fourth grade.
I was listening to Kenny G, actually. 7-4.
I'll pass.
One. Oh, there you go. Now I really hope he's listening. All right. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite problem solvers, the Grammar Police. And actually, Zorba, this one's from I don't think we've heard of them from them before. This is from the Ginger Police.
Oh, not at all.
Have we heard from them?
No.
I don't believe so. Brad, have we heard from them? No, it's a no.
It's a no. Yeah, I say no.
All right.
You know, that's in the UK. Somebody with red hair, it's called ginger.
Oh,
hair.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard that before.
I mean, that's all.
Yeah.
That's what I know. Do you like ginger when you're cooking?
Yeah, I love it. Mm-hmm. It's great. I like it on sushi.
On sushi?
Yeah.
Do you ever know anyone named Ginger?
I think in college I knew a ginger, maybe.
Yeah. I've known a few people named
You've
Ginger.
Known, well, there was Gilligan's Island, right?
There's Gilligan's Island. There's always
Didn't
Gilligan's
know her,
Island.
But,
that's right.
Yeah. Very famous ginger. Yeah. The following email
How would
came,
you know her? She's from Gilligan's Island. I mean.
Maybe she grew up in Robbinsdale, Minnesota, and I ran into her at the Cub Foods.
That's right.
The following email came from Kevin in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, who writes, Zorba, I'm sending this feedback on behalf of my wife, Nicole. We often listen to the show via the WPR app during our dog's, quote, choose-your-own-adventure weekend walks in Oconomowoc. Neighbors hearing this will recognize us as the beagle-walking couple always blasting Dr. Zorba on his phone during the walks. We love the show, the thoughtful and practical advice,
Thank
and
you.
The deep dives on health topics of interest each week. That's Thanks. Very nice.
Yeah, it is very nice.
We
Thank
also
you.
Love, well, there's a lot of praise
Thank
here.
You.
We also love
it's
the
okay.
recipes you
share. I like praise.
Should I keep going?
Okay. Please, yeah, please.
We also love the recipes you share and have added several to our recurring favorites, the most recent being mushroom and tofu stir fry. That was a good one. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
That's great. We've cooked it twice in the past month, they said. The first time we did it, I convinced my wife to try your advice regarding keeping ginger in the freezer and grinding it while still frozen. I've heard you say that several times, ginger in the freezer. She crabbed about it the whole time, and I'll never hear the end of it. It doesn't grate well using her ceramic grinding plate, and it doesn't provide, quote, the ginger juice she loves as grating fresh thawed ginger does. Keep the great recipes and advice coming, except if it involves grating frozen ginger. What do you think of that?
Well, I grate it all the time, so I don't use a ceramic. You know those, you know the graters, the traditional grater that's like four-sided.
It's like a big thing. Yeah, right. Yeah. The big.
But I've got a small one that's flat.
Okay, yeah.
It's like the four thing, but it's like mini, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Does it produce ginger juice when it's frozen ginger?
Yeah, not quite as much as regular ginger.
Okay.
But I've been doing that for many decades, more than I'd like to even say.
Okay.
Since college. That was a long time ago. So I may use a different, I don't grind it. What do you call it when you take it?
Yeah.
Do you call that grinding?
Listeners, we're doing a thing with our hands where we're like whittling. It looks like whittling.
Yeah, it's like I whittle it. There it is. I whittle my ginger. I don't grind
whittling.
It. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. No, whittling, not whittling. Quiddling.
No, I like whittling.
Yeah.
Put a little wind into it. Whittling.
Yeah, let's go into the next call.
Okay.
It's all right.
Ginger
I'll pass
juice.
On that.
Have you heard
whittling,
of ginger juice?
Whittling.
Okay, I got to end this somehow. So for this outro, I need
Good
Brad.
Luck.
Brad, can you cue up a clip real quick here? Okay, Zorba, do you want to be...
Rolling down the street, making stir-fry, grating up ginger juice.
Ginger juice.
Just join the ever-growing grammar police. Post on our Facebook page or send us an email at...
Zorba@WPR.org.
That seemed excessive, that level of production.
It's okay. Excessive is all right.
Okay.
It's all right. You don't have to, you can be excessive about some things and you can pass on others.
Our technical director, Brad, just held up a sign that said, that's excessive production. We'll have more of your emails, more of your voicemails and emails and calls. There's all kinds of things happening. And we'll have a special guest author coming up. That's a good thing.
It is. It is a good thing.
We haven't done one in a while.
You're going to want to stay around.
It's going to be a tasty pizza recipe.
Absolutely.
So all of that coming up on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. He's sitting right over there on the mic across from me. The
yes.
number to call, right? Yeah. The number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to those phones, it's recipe time again, Zorba.
Da-da-da-da.
And this week, we're in for quite a treat. Today, we have a special guest author joining in on the fun. Alexandra Stafford is an award-winning author and creator of the popular food blog, Alexandra's Kitchen. Her new cookbook is called Pizza Night, Deliciously Doable Recipes for Pizza and Salad. She joins us today to share a delicious pizza recipe from her new book. Alexandra, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. And this book is lovely.
It is a great book. It's a great book. I love the way it looks, the front of the book. I love the pictures. Clarkson Potter is a great publishing company. They publish great cookbooks. It feels good, looks good, and I bet it tastes good. Not the book, but the actual recipes.
Thank you so much. That's so nice to hear.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things right away, there's a quote. I just want to quickly read part of it. One of my favorite things in this book, you wrote, pizza gets you through it. Divorce, marriage, death, birth, triumph, and defeat. I love that.
It is. I mean, pizza is the answer to life's hardest questions, always.
Yeah, it really is. It really is wonderful. And this particular recipe, pineapple pizza with bacon and jalapenos, is the one we want to do. And we're going to put this on our website so people can look at it, because no one, especially people in their car, are going to write it down while they're actually driving. Forget about the texting. But I've got a question for you. You've got so many good recipes yeah. in this. How did you decide to do a book on pizza? I mean, there are many books on pizza, but your book is exceptional. Why did you do this in the first place?
Well, I think it really came out of boredom. I found myself making the same, you know, three or four pizzas over and over again, week after week, especially during the pandemic when pizza night became not just like a one night a week occasion, mm-hmm. but like a two or three night a week occasion. And I wondered, if I'm feeling bored with what I'm topping, I wonder if other people are similarly feeling bored.
I think you hit it right on the head. That's right. And especially during COVID, you know, we weren't making really good memories during that time either. So I think that was sort of part of it. So
exactly.
The dough, you spend a bit of time with the dough, and the dough is important. My son-in-law, Mitchell, who lives in Seattle, the dough is important to him. My other son-in-law, Nicholas, who lives in Seattle, and I was just recently out there, and they all showed me the dough, and they've got a pizza. What do you call it? It's not a pizza stone. It's steel.
The baking steel, yes. I am a huge proponent of the baking steel. A pizza stone, which most people had for many years, is great as well, but steel is better. It's a better conductor of heat, which just means it will transfer the heat faster to the dough, which will help create those like glorious bubbles and poofy crust that you're looking for in your crust. And it also helps keep it, especially with the thin crust version, it will help create a crisper crust, which is very challenging in a home oven.
Absolutely. So how long before you put the pizza in the oven do you let the oven warm up?
I really encourage people to let their ovens heat for an hour, which feels like a long time. And I know that can be hard when you get home from work and you're just trying to get pizza in the oven. But really ensuring that steel has time to thoroughly preheat makes all the difference if you have the time. If you don't, just heat it for as long as possible.
Of course. That's it.
Yeah.
So let's make the recipe. I'm not going to go over with the dough in detail because that's in the book. It's also going to be on a recipe. So we use it for all-purpose flour. Is that what you use in the dough when you make it?
Yes, this is the thin crust dough recipe. So you can use all-purpose flour if you feel like investing in some Tipo 00 flour, mm-hmm. which is the finely milled Italian flour. It's really known for its extensibility. It's a great flour to use in this dough recipe, but I had many recipe testers, you know, over the course of making this book, and I really wanted to ensure that you could use basic ingredients you could find at the store.
Right. You don't have to. Hard to find double zero in the store where I shop, so I ended up buying some online to actually get it there.
Also calls for a little bit of semola. It's not semolina. It's like more finely ground semolina flour. And again, you don't have to use it. I've made the dough recipe many times with just all-purpose flour. But again, if you feel like investing in it, the semola just adds like another, it's a nice textural element to the
dough. And I think we're going to have people who are going to want to go that extra length, and other people are going to say, I'm going to use stuff that's around. So you've got two different audiences.
Yes.
So a quarter of a pineapple, you know, six ounces or so, 4 ounces of bacon, thick bacon or thin bacon?
Bacon is fine. Yep, just regular. Yeah, and bacon is great.
Tablespoonful of extra virgin olive oil, some flaky sea salt, like you said, semolina, you know, like you said, the flour that's in there, and then freshly grated cheese, pecorino or Parmesan or Romano. That's really critical, isn't it?
Actually, so for this one, I'm actually using the finely grated, like the sort of really almost like the powdery stuff, the pre-grated, the pecorino or Parmesan. And it's just a different flavor element. I like to finish my pizzas with like really good Parmigiano Reggiano or Pecorino. But for this, like when I make like a clam pizza or any other style, like sort of certain, when you're kind of trying to get that classic pizzeria taste, the pre-grated finely Pecorino or Parmesan is perfect. And you're just using a couple tablespoons of here. It has like a salty element and that sort of classic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds wonderful. I hadn't even thought about the fact that the texture makes a big difference on basically how it's going to bake within the oven.
Right.
And then a quarter to a half cup of jalapenos. Carl, would you use a quarter or a half cup?
I would maybe even go way more than that, just because I love jalapenos so much.
There we go. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, low moisture, but whole milk mozzarella cheese. That's what you use on there. And that's very important, too. And then flaky sea salt. So prepare the dough, then prepare the toppings. Cut the pineapple quarter lengthwise into three sections, keeping the sections together, cutting them. So cutting them makes a difference. Placing the bacon in a large skillet over high heat, making it, sizzling it, making it and cooking it so there's some fat, but it's not yet crisp. So that's part of the critical aspect because you're going to be baking it in the oven itself. Add olive oil to the skillet, set it over medium heat with the pineapple, season with a pinch of sea salt, cook until the pineapple is just beginning to brown, flip it and continue to cook till it's fork tender on the underside. This is really all the prep that you're doing before you're putting the pizza together, and that's got a critical aspect of making this work.
Correct, yeah. So you don't want to cook the bacon completely because it's going to crisp up further in the oven, but you still want to get it to a point where it's slightly crisp. And then you're going to cook that pineapple in the rendered bacon fat. So it kind of, it helps to like spread that bacon flavor across the pizza. And then cooking the pineapple too, it's soft. Like pineapple is hard. You can, if you just throw uncooked pineapple on your pizza, it's going to be a little bit tough. But cooking it briefly just softens it. It caramelizes it. It removes some of the water too, which is helpful because you don't, any things with a lot of moisture will make your crust soggy.
You know, you've experimented with this a lot, and I think the fact that you went to Yale has shown off in the pineapple. A Yaley would go to the extent that you have gone through. That's exactly it. You've shown your cred. Your alma mater would be very pleased with how you did this, and your professors there would say, good job. She did a good job. I trained her well. So,
oh, my God.
Then we brush the dough with one or two tablespoons. I mean, it's the attention to detail that counts, right? Brush the dough with 1 to 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil over the edges. Sprinkle the Romano over. Scatter the jalapenos evenly over the top. Sprinkle the mozzarella evenly over the top. All the way to the edges, it's important. Scatter the pineapple evenly over the top, followed by the bacon. Drizzle with a little olive oil. Shimmy the pizza. I've got it. I know how to do it. I've got a little, whatever you call the scrapers are, into the oven. Bake it 4 to 5 minutes because you've left it on for an hour. You've forgotten about everything else in your life, but you put it on for an hour, transfer to cutting board, and then you finally have something to eat. Yeah, that's right.
This sounds amazing.
And it is sound amazing, but your attention to detail. But as I said, you learned it. You got your cred from what you did when you went to your alma mater. I think my one son went to MIT and the other one went to Harvard. They don't like the Yaleys. So I just have to tell you.
What would an MIT pizza look like, do you think?
Eli's Pizza. Oh, yeah. You know, that's right. It would be exactly like this, though. The attention to detail.
Yeah.
I think the important thing about this book, and really getting back to the recipe, is you've given a lot of tips that really will help our listeners make a fabulous pizza. It's a great book, Pizza Night by Alexandra Stafford. And I think you've done a great job. So thank you very much. Thanks for sharing this.
Thank you so much. It was so nice chatting with you.
Okay. Thanks. You take care. And like Carl said, it's pizza no matter what the occasion is.
It is.
That's right. Marriage, divorce, have a child, pizza always goes well.
Triumph,
with
defeat, all
That's
of it.
That's right.
Or in our house, every night feels like pizza night, it seems like. It's just, especially during the pandemic,
right.
Everything was pizza night.
Thanks all for your help.
Thanks so much, Alexandra.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
To get a copy of today's recipe or to find out more about Alexandra Stafford's new book, Pizza Night, Deliciously Doable Recipes for Pizza and Salad, just go to our website at
ZorbaPastor.org, or of course you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, let's hear a voicemail now. This is a caller from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hi. My question for Zorba is whether or not your HDL can be too high. My cholesterol levels are all very good, except my HDL is always hovering around 90. My other numbers are all well within the limits, but my HDL is high. And some of what I've been reading says that that can be indicative of heart disease. So I'd like to know your thoughts. Thank you so much.
I don't think it's indicative of heart disease at all. People with high HDLs generally don't have heart disease. So, you know, there can be other lipid problems where you have a high HDL and you have an high LDL. But the data really shows that HDL is good cholesterol. It's protective. And often you then look at family history and you add other things to it. So do you smoke cigarettes? Do you drink too much alcohol? Are you a diabetic? All these things add up to heart disease. And usually people with high HDLs that high have longevity in their family, not only longevity, they often have family history where people live well into their late 80s and late 90s, but they also have a decrease in dementia because there's so much dementia that's cardiovascular. So the answer is, if you've got an HDL that high, great, good luck. Do not worry about heart disease. Enjoy your life, but do well in other things. Don't smoke, exercise, and so on to keep that heart healthy. But she's a public radio person.
Oh, sure.
And all public radio people do healthy things, right?
Top health, for yes, sure.
That's right. If it were only so. Listening to the show, actually, listening to the show will reduce your risk of heart disease. We know that.
Okay,
right?
Do I have to read the disclaimer
that's right.
again?
Yeah,
this
no
early?
Disclaimer.
Okay.
No disclaimer. I'll take full benefit. Thank you. Thank you very much.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, it's time to put on your black judicial robe and unholster your official plastic gavel. This is the segment where the good doc transforms himself into Judge Zorba.
See, I just want to make sure it's still working.
That was a pre-judgment right there.
Yeah, there was that's right. It was a pre-judgment. That's right.
You're pre-judging?
You know, I've had this gavel for years. It's just, I mean, it's wonderful.
It's
you
a
know,
great
we
gavel.
Have never shown a picture of this on
All right.
our website.
Let's put it on the Facebook page.
I mean, let's put it on the Facebook page.
Okay.
I think it's important that people actually see the gavel that
mm-hmm.
I use because once again, once the gavel goes, judgment rendered.
That's right. An
That's
instrument
right.
of justice
That's
needs
right.
to be
Got
seen.
It. That's right.
It's a nice
exactly.
one. All right. The following email is from a listener named Steven who writes, about 3 years ago, I was diagnosed by a physical therapist with a frozen shoulder. It was slow to resolve, and he eventually sent me to an orthopedic surgeon who got me an MRI and diagnosed a torn rotator cuff in addition mm-hmm. to the frozen shoulder.
Okay.
He referred to it as a ticking time bomb mm-hmm. and recommended surgery mm-hmm. as soon as the frozen shoulder mm-hmm. self-resolved, mm-hmm. which it did a month or so later.
Okay.
Since then, no problems whatsoever, and I'm back to rock climbing mm-hmm. and shooting my bow.
Mm-hmm.
My PA says mm-hmm. don't get the surgery mm-hmm. until you must. But that runs counter mm-hmm. to the surgeon's advice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying pain-free, mm-hmm. active, 53-year-old living. What do I do to keep it? Thank you.
I'm ready to
You
get
got
my
the
judgment.
Gavel ready.
I'm with the PA.
Really?
Rock climbing, doing your stuff, he doesn't necessarily need the surgery.
Okay.
I don't think it's a ticking time bomb. You know, you say a ticking time bomb, it's like it's going to all of a sudden get bad. But the answer is when we actually do MRIs and we look at things like, rotator cuff injury, that doesn't necessarily show that you actually need surgery on that. Mm. It really is a matter of that and function. So I would say the orthopedic surgeon is kind of, in this case, not going out on a limb saying, well, you really have to fix it because otherwise one day you're going to have an injury and it's not going to be good for you. Okay, fix it when you have the injury. But he's a 50-some-year-old. He's rock climbing. He's using his shoulder. He's doing it conservatively.
Those are shoulder-heavy activities.
Very shoulder activities. And I think this also goes along with some other things, that there's too much orthopedic surgery that goes on in this country. You know, we look at an orthopedic surgeon. Not all. We'll look at something, say it's abnormal. A chance to cut is a chance to cure. I mean, it's sort of a joke that primary care docs say about surgeons. But the answer is there is too much surgery going on. So this person has done well. Physical therapy has said, keep up what you're doing. I would not have the surgery. Once again, I banged it twice. I'm on the PA side.
Have a tricky health question? Judge Zorba is always willing to shoulder the burden. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have much more of the show to come. We'll have more of your calls. We'll tackle another interesting health topic and more of your emails as well. So keep that radio dialed right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. He's sitting right over there across from me on that microphone, looking good in his Zion National Park hat.
That's right. You got it. And I'm not virtual.
You're real. You're a real doctor.
I'm not a hologram. I'm not.
800-462-7413 is the number you can call anytime. Leave us a voicemail if you'd like. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to our call, Zorba, another healthy living topic here. We're talking about high weekly physical activity levels linked to lower kidney disease, diabetes, some other things. Exercise is good, basically.
We talk about this a lot.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's worth mentioning
now,
again.
Well, and it's worth mentioning what sort of a number that seems to work. So if you boost your activity, and we'll talk about how much you actually have to do, that you're doing throughout the week, you lower your risk of developing kidney disease by about 33%. That's a lot, because there's more and more kidney disease. And lots of people, among other things, because as a society, we're getting older and older and older. We have more obesity than we ever had, and so on, other things. Now, 10 minutes at a time makes a difference. To me, that's part of it. 10 minutes at a time that basically links to just about an hour a week produce the 33% reduction. Hmm. This doesn't seem to me to be a lot. So if you did 10 minutes a day, that would basically be 70 minutes a week. And that's enough to lower the risk you're to develop kidney disease and significantly decrease the risk of diabetes. This is not hard stuff.
It's worth it.
This is small stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, I've really been a big proponent of the small steps. You know, we say, well, American Heart Association said it should be 20 minutes of, rigorous activity, getting your heart rate up to 80% of its maximum for 20 minutes three times a week. Well, some people can do it. I mean, people who look good in Lycra definitely can do it. And then there are people who don't look as good in Lycra and often don't do it. And it's the people who don't look good, and seriously, I mean that, are the ones generally who don't do physical activity. And it's a problem as you get older and older. I'm an older person. I think about my joints when my joints bother me. And if I don't move around, they actually feel worse. You know, so I've discovered activity really helps me feel better. But this is 10 minutes a day can reduce your risk that you're going to have kidney disease or heart disease. It's really kind of an amazing thing. So this was basically a study, a mega study of different trials looking at people. It's called the Look Ahead Participants. Their average age was 58, so they were middle-aged people. And they looked at 1 year, 4 years, and 8 years later, looking at activity trackers and looking at chronic kidney disease. So you have an activity tracker. You've got a watch on you, but that looks like
this
an
is
old
like
school.
An old Timex watch.
Timex? What's Timex?
It's kind of like a Casio, as John Candy would say.
That's right, a Casio. But you've got a phone. Do your phone, if you have your phone on,
it does
you
have
the
health app. I don't think I use it very often, my 9-year-old son has a watch that tracks all. He loves that stuff.
He loves it. And a lot of people do. But if you track the activity and you look at how many steps you're doing, we know that the real difference is below 2,000 steps a day generally is not good at all. And we know once you get about 4,000 and above 4,000, you're getting activity. You're getting actually good benefit. They had activity trackers on. They followed these people for 4 years and 8 years later, and lo and behold, 10 minutes a day made a big difference. So there's a bottom line. It's not a big number. It's a small number. Now, will you do better if you do more? Of course, you're going to feel better if you do more. But 10 minutes a day is achievable by every single person. And it's really a matter of if you say, I don't have the time to actually do 10 minutes a day, you're fooling yourself. And it means that a little bit of difference can make a big difference in your life now and later on. It's the 10-minute goal, and it's the 10-minute challenge.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's try to help a caller now in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, kind of an odd thing, but over the last year, I've lost my ability to whistle. And I'm a bit of a bird watcher, and so... You know, it's not, you don't have to be exact to call birds in, but I haven't been able to whistle like I have.
So now, wait a second. So when you whistle, you attract birds? That's your, I'm trying to picture
this. When you're bird watching, if you're trying to call something in, you can do a bad imitation and a lot of times that'll work. Especially with cardinals.
So you've been doing this for years. Since you were pretty young.
Mm-hmm. I've been whistling a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm a crummy guitar player and some songs. Like, you know, John Sebastian's What a Day for Daydream. There's a part in there where he's like, you know, he gets into his refrain, and I can't do it anymore. And I used to. I'm 73. Uh-huh. I had bypass surgery last July.
Okay.
I'm like, did my brain forget how to pucker up or?
Well, first of all, let me go back a second. So you were able to whistle until you had the bypass surgery, until you had the heart surgery, the bypass surgery?
I think so. It's really difficult to pinpoint it. And I'm trying to think what changed, what's different, you know, and that's all I can come up with. Well, I travel, I leave Wisconsin in the winter and I travel out west and I do a lot of bird watching out there, and I'm like, what happened?
Right. Well, let me go back a step. So first of all, there are a couple possibilities here if I sort of bird dog this. And I think about this.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, I've got Carl in front of me. He's the punster.
Yeah.
So I have to occasionally.
I always appreciate a good pun.
He always appreciates it. So first of all, as we get older, our bodies change. And sometimes we can't do things with our muscles. Whistling uses a muscle. So it's possible. One possibility is those muscles are not working the way they used to. And you want to try to whistle and continue to try and do some training, just like people train to sing, and they can train when they're older to sing, but they can't sing like they could when they were younger because muscles change and we don't necessarily have the ability. Rock climbers often can't rock climb as much, so it's a muscular issue. That's one possibility. Another possibility is, yes, it may have been affected by being on the bypass machine. And that's a real possibility, and I'll tell you why. We know that people who are on the bypass machine can have memory dysfunction after the bypass machine and are more at risk for depression. I mean, those are things that we measure you know, we measure it, they'll say, gee, my memory's not quite the same, or they'll go into depression. And it's called pump head, which is sort of a term for it. So we know there are certain things that occur when you're on the bypass. It's not the same as your heart and lungs working together. So it's possible that that did occur, and it's also a third possibility that you may have had a mini stroke that actually occurred in some part of your brain, where your brain didn't get quite enough oxygen. We can't measure where it is. We can't. There's no whistling sight, you know, that we have in the brain. But there's a possibility that that actually occurred during the surgery, prior to the surgery, around the time that you needed the surgery. So there are all possibilities there that cause this. And if you noticed it after that, those are my thoughts. Now, given that, I wouldn't leave that to the side. And what I would do is I would go to YouTube, if this was something I would do, and I would say, what are some exercises I may be able to do to whistle again? That's what I would do. I would also look at your mouth and whether or not your mouth is lubricated enough. We know that when you get drier, we know that that affects things. I would also, if I really wanted to whistle, I would put a vaporizer in the bedroom right next to me. So when I slept at night, 7 to 8 hours, you should be in bed. It would be in a moist environment versus a dry environment. If you're going out west, it's probably a more dry environment, which is drier in Wisconsin, even in the wintertime.
Right.
And if you moisturize yourself at night, that may help that. I would also drink more when I'm going around, so that I would be more hydrated. So I would look at the mucous membranes, I would look at the muscles, and I wouldn't take it lying down. I would try to work on it more and more. And I wish I could whistle and attract birds. And, and I used to whistle all the time, but I don't whistle anymore. And I've never learned how to. Can you put your fingers in your mouth and do that big whistle? You know that they.
No, I used to be able to just. You know, with your teeth on your lower lip.
I got it, man.
Doing really loud.
I got it, man.
I can't do that anymore.
No, I used to whistle a lot when I was a kid. On the other hand, I gave it up, and I haven't retried to do it again. But I used to be able to sing more than I can sing more, and I think part of it is muscular, part of it is age. So, once again, I would try those things, but I do think there's a possibility that the surgery that you had or the bypass or the reason you had the surgery in the first place, which was for cardiovascular disease, has affected your brain in the areas that are necessary to whistle. But like we send people to physical rehabilitation, you want to do some sort of brain muscle mouth rehabilitation to see if you can whistle and attract those birds.
I can really relate, and just some awesome stuff. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Well, thanks for your call. And I'm sure there are other whistlers out there that really will appreciate that.
So. I'm going to go back working on it and work up those lip muscles.
Absolutely, 100%. Do not give it up. You like it, don't give it up.
Yes.
Work on it. So thanks. Thanks so much for
your
call. You take care.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's take a listener email. The following question came from a listener named Teresa, who writes, "Thanks for a great show. I'm in my mid-60s, exercise regularly, and eat healthy on most days. I recently heard about a plant-based stem cell enhancer called StemRegen. What are your thoughts on taking a stem cell enhancer? The monthly cost is expensive, but is it worth the cost? Thanks."
Well, the monthly cost is expensive.
That depends on what the cost,
something,
right?
But for something that has not proven to do anything. So, I mean, there's a lot of hubbub around stem cells for good reasons. We don't really understand them well. We understand they're really important. And over the last 25 years, there's been lots and lots of research. It hasn't yet produced something that has produced some major issues from a health point of view, but I have a lot of faith that eventually we're going to figure out what to do, because genetically we know that cells differentiate, you know, very early site, you know, in the embryonic phase. But plant-based stem cell enhancer, wow, sounds wonderful, doesn't it? Sounds like it's plant-based, it's not animal-based, you know, it's going to really enhance you, and you're going to spend a lot of money and not get any benefit. I mean, you know, the reality is it smells to me like snake oil. Does snake oil smell? And where did they say
snake oil? That's not plant-based, though. Snake oil is not plant-based.
Right. Snake oil is not plant-based. The answer is, wait a minute, got to get out my gavel.
Here comes the gavel.
Da-ba-da-da. No.
Okay. Have a healthy living question for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
zorbapastor.org.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right. Before we clock out today, Zorba, I'd like to read an email we got from a listener, Linda, in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba and Carl. You two are like old friends, and I listen to you every week."
Oh, how nice.
I love it.
How nice.
Very nice. Thanks, Linda. "When you mentioned biting into dark chocolate as you step into the shower and getting a double sensation, I had to try it. Do you remember this at all? Like, I was talking about a friend of mine who said they like to take a really high-quality dark chocolate, get a hot shower going, and as soon as they step that first step into the shower, they bite into the chocolate. So you get that sensation from the chocolate and from the hot water hitting your body.
Yeah,
it's very strange.
That's right, very strange. I do not remember that, but that's okay.
Oh, that's okay.
There's some things I remember. You know, I put that out of my brain. It was like, really?
On purpose.
All right, you know. Unpublished, on the brain, prune the memories. That's enough.
Maybe too spicy for public radio. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's why you buried that one.
I don't know. Yeah, jumping into a shower? No. Come
while biting chocolate.
That's hygienic.
It's hygienic. Anyways, Linda says, "I enjoyed it so much."
Oh, she did?
Yes,
oh, okay.
yes, she writes.
Mm-hmm.
"I sat down in the warm bath water," so bath instead of shower, still the same thing probably, "and ate the whole chocolate bar."
Wow.
"We appreciate your wisdom and humor.
It's great.
You too.
I love it.
Enjoy life, Linda."
I love it. Chocolate and hygiene.
Are you
going to
try that?
That's right. Yeah, I will.
You should try it.
I'll try it. I'll have to get out my favorite chocolate from the chocolate caper in Oregon.
Ah.
And as I go into the hot shower, I will definitely do it. Or I have a hot tub. Maybe I should just sit in the hot tub with my coffee in the morning, bite into some chocolate, and think about the world. I like it. I think it's great.
Do you get it when you first step into the hot tub? Do you get that tingly sensation? Like, can you picture that right now?
I can definitely. Oh,
yeah,
of course.
The
when
first,
it's hot.
Yeah, it's great.
Definitely,
it's
got to
be really hot.
When you go in there, it's got to be really hot. That's right. Yeah.
So add some chocolate to
the
mix.
Chocolate dip.
Just
great.
Don't
That's
spill
great.
It in the hot
That's
tub.
That's right. And this show is brought to you by the Chocolate Association of the United States of America.
Do I have to read the disclaimer?
That's right.
Do you want to shower us with praise? We'll always take it.
That's right.
Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Should we do this again next week, Zorba?
Let's try.
Let's do our best. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime.
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 To leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. There's our disclaimer. I finally read it. After talking about it this whole time, finally read it.
Finally.
Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.